You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm Austin Meek of WacoBusinessNews.com, and today my guest is Jimmy Dorrell, Executive Director of Mission Waco. Jimmy is an effortlessly relatable middle-class dude who's fought poverty in Waco for nearly four decades with tremendous results. But before we jump in that conversation, it's the word on the street. Visit at Waco Business News on Twitter or Facebook right now, and you'll see a piece I wrote on real estate developer Marshall Stuman back in October 2016. Marshall and I met when his project, Mary Avenue Market, was first getting off the ground. He'd just been awarded $294,000 in TIF funding from the city of Waco, and in our Q&A, he talked about his vision for creating a dense, walkable retail environment. He's rewarded the city's trust in his project with a gem. The area was already hot with Magnolia Market just two blocks away, and Marshall used part of his TIF funding to create a pedestrian corridor linking his project to the silos and the Dr. Pepper Museum. With Guest Family Barbecue now serving smoked meats every weekend out of the Apex Roasters parking lot next door, the vision Marshall had 9 months ago has filled out even better than he could have imagined. I tracked him down earlier this week for an update on the project.
So Echo in Waco is nearing the final stages, and they should be open the first or second week in August. Other than Good Timber Furnishing, they're the only place that won't be open. So you'll have Iron Willow, Pie Peddlers, and Fox and Gray that are all open as well.
Marshall has assembled a unique collection of vendors who can capitalize on the mammoth pedestrian traffic generated by the silos. Last count I heard was 30,000 visitors per week. The offerings at Mary Avenue Market would certainly appeal to the typical Magnolia shopper, but there's something for locals too, especially if you got a sweet tooth like me.
Iron Willow is a custom metalwork artwork studio. Pie Peddlers has amazing pies. They actually won Best Pie in Texas a couple years ago. And then Fox and Gray is a high-end boutique clothing store.
The final space in the project is Good Timber, which makes furniture out of wine and whiskey barrels. Marshall said they should be open late this summer or early fall. I did some more sleuthing into rumors of a food hall coming to downtown Waco, and while I can't share vendors or a location at this time, just check out studioh2g.com and drool for a little while. I've been talking with the broker for the project for the last couple weeks, and the only thing he'd confirmed to me was that the company who's designing the food hall is from Michigan. I believe the group he's referencing is Studio H2G, which has designed award-winning food halls in shopping centers across the globe. Not just Detroit and Denver, but Berlin and Istanbul. If I'm sniffing in the right direction, if H2G is in fact designing a food hall in downtown, this will go a long way in putting Waco's food scene at the head of the curve in Central Texas. Stay peeped at Waco Business News on Twitter and Facebook for updates before next show. Jimmy Dorrell is the co-founder and executive director of Mission Waco. He's made a name for himself in North Waco as someone who doesn't mind getting his hands dirty, much like the late city councilman Reverend Wilbert Austin did for years on the east side of the river. Jimmy's passion for the poor and for mobilizing the middle class to become involved in the lives of the poor has led to the creation of Church Under the Bridge, of which he's the pastor, the Jubilee Food Market, World Cup Cafe, and other concepts with a charitable focus. Jimmy, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Excited to be here.
So happy to have you on the show. And as always, I like starting the show by asking how you got here. What is your story for getting to Waco?
I came to Baylor in 1968. Tuition was $25 an hour back then, and Baylor was about half the size it is now, maybe even less than half. And our football team didn't do so well back in those days. But I loved Waco. I was from Conroe, which was a small city back then. Now it's huge because they built the lake and half of Houston came. But Waco was a big city for me. And I got involved in the community because I became a youth director my sophomore year. So instead of just hanging out at the restaurants and with Baylor kids, I was working in the high schools and being around kids. And one of the things that happened early on was I grew up in the 60s, very challenging time with race and different social issues. And I grew up in a very divided world. My hometown was divided by race. The churches were, the water fountains were, everything. It was really a time that I'm embarrassed to look back at now. But when I came to Waco, the poverty was overwhelming. And I remember being out in the community and realizing not only was it a poor community, but a very diverse community, and so much of the poverty was racially based. And so as I got out there, I had to start working with folks from all different classes. And I had a call one day from a pastor named Dewey Pinckney. Never forget him. A lot of the folks that have been around a long time will remember Pinckney, who was the head of the NAACP, was a pastor of a church called St. Mary's Baptist Church. I was a Baptist kid by background. I didn't know you could have a St. Mary's Baptist Church by name because it was seemed so different from anything I'd come from. But Pinckney invited me over to what then was called No Man's Land. There was this little pocket of poverty between Waco and Belmead. And went over with a little fear and trembling, and Pinckney said, would you consider bringing your youth group over here to No Man's Land and helping our kids that are poor? And I remember going over there. There was even a house. It was so bad that we were sure nobody lived in it, had a tree growing through the front porch, pushed the door open, and a man screamed because a man did live in there, but he was completely blind, no utilities, no nothing. And it was the whole neighborhood was like that. So it was almost like a third world country. And here it was less than 2 miles away from Baylor University. So those were very formative years for me and the choices that we've made.
That's interesting that you bring that up because religion can so often blind us to the real things that we need to be working on. And with Mission Waco, you guys seem to really – you have the Christian focus, of course, but you seem to really be good at getting to the heart of the issues and truly getting your hands dirty to make change.
I think some foundational things happened in my life where instead of the chasing the degrees and the – I mean, I have lots of college, but it was a sense of everybody's important. And I don't know how my parents built that into me or where it came from, but as I began to face my own prejudice back in the 60s and early 70s and begin to get past that, I fell in love with broken people. I took a job after the state home. At the state home after my job with the church that I was in. And got cussed out the first day by a six-year-old kid and stopped fights. And they talked about my mama and everything else out there. It was a rough, rough atmosphere out there. But it was kind of my put up or shut up season of life where I believed the Bible. I believed my faith was genuine. But I was so separated from living that out in terms of crossing the barriers of race and mental health issues and whatever the issues were. And I remember having this long talk with God at Cameron Park one night on Friday night after that first horrible week, kind of my time to say, okay, I'm going to get out of this. And it was sort of the lights came on, and I realized, okay, this is my opportunity to live out. How do you learn to love kids who don't love you back? Because their parents had abused them. They didn't have love for adults. How can I get past that? And those 3 years probably changed the way I look at the world more than anything else that ever happened. And so out of that experience, being able to see that six-year-old kid is just as important as I am. And by the way, it's really been fun because I'm an old guy now, and some of those kids I still keep up with that are now in their 40s and 50s, you know. So it's really been interesting to be around them. And the kids in the youth group as well. So there's been this season of life where bearing the fruit now of lots of diversity in my life. We know the hardcore folks, and we know folks that are doing well. And everybody's just people. Mm-hmm. They're just people.
Richard Rohr is a Franciscan author and teacher, someone whose work I've been following closely recently, and he talks about the spark of the divine and how that is in every single person. And years and years of life, we just get tar on us that's sort of covering that spark. It's hard for some people to see it. How do Wacoans soften themselves? How do we go about reaching that spark of the divine with our people that we see on the streets in our neighborhoods?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, let me say that's an awakening that I think God does in our lives when we wake up one day and we've got big houses and nice cars and everybody's pretty. but we realize there's something missing. There's more to life than this. I only get one shot at this deal. We want to better evaluate. That is a critical aha moment for most of us, where we start saying, what matters? I mean, and it's scary, because if we change our lifestyle or if we change our views, there's risk involved. And it's a whole lot easier to go back and do what I did yesterday and do it the next day. And I think the crustiness, the tar, as you said, gets so thick that we can't even feel and think differently anymore. So those are moments you don't want to run away from. And I think as people wake up, then they can call and say, hey, I'd love to volunteer with one of those inner city kids and help them learn how to read better. And when you step into a different atmosphere where children live in poverty or people are struggling with hunger or whatever the homelessness, whatever the issues are, and you realize these are just kids and people who could have been me. I don't know why I was born like I was, where I was, but too much has been given, much will be required. I am now the privileged person in the world, and I get the privilege now to help people out of the resources. But here's what matters even further than that to me. All of a sudden, I realize I learn a lot of things about life from the poor themselves. We have this idea that I'm the resource person, I've got all this to give away, but sometimes we realize the poor get it. We work in Haiti and Mexico and India. We work in the streets of Waco. We are around people that live in desperate poverty, and I have been so humbled by the people who are nobodies to the rest of the world, who live out of a value or a character or compassion that is so different from people I know that are struggling with too much. So it's a real interesting irony of life that it goes both ways. We have relationships that go across. We learn from each other, and we can benefit. So when you have that moment, you get out there and start living in the, going out and playing with the kids in the housing complexes or whatever it is, things begin to come alive, and you begin to decide, can I do this on a regular basis? And then you fall in love with it. And all of a sudden, you're like, this is a lot more fun than doing what I'm doing in my routine life, playing golf every day. That's fine if you do that. But, you know, there is more to life than that. So anyway, it's been a real fun. Those moments, I think, where you jump to the next level, when the, you know, spirit sort of moves inside and you say, it's time to change some things about my life. And we've been doing that now. Part of our ministry is to what we call mobilizing. How do we help people? We do the poverty simulation. We take people out of country trips, all those things that sort of awaken people.
You're hearing Jimmy Dorrell, Executive Director of Mission Waco. Jimmy, when Janet and you moved over to North Waco in 1978, it didn't look like it looks now. And you guys have done so much in just taking that neighborhood, really that intersection there at Colcord and 15th, just building by building, piece by piece, and transforming it for the kingdom.
Talk
a little bit specifically about the Jubilee Grocery, the way that that sort of got started, and what the reception has been with the community there. Because as we've learned, the way that you can fight poverty is through education and through giving the health that these people need. You can't expect a hungry kid to go to school and be able to learn. If they can't learn, then they're not gonna be able to go get a job and support themselves.
We use the word empowerment a lot. We believe that sometimes well-meaning people, Christians included, do things for others thinking they're helping. We have a little saying that comes out of the theology we work out of, that the people with the problem must be a part of the solution to the problem, that I can't fix anybody. They've got to want to change. I don't fix anybody's neighborhood. But our goal is to build relationships with folks, love them, encourage them, affirm them, and help them become part of the team that changes in their own neighborhood. And so with that model, really 40 years ago now, we built relationships in the community. Our kids play with their kids. All of a sudden, when your children are going to schools that are less than satisfactory, you begin to understand the plight of the poor neighborhood people whose kids have to go there. And you think, you know, everybody ought to get a fair education. So how do I stand in the gap? How do I do social justice and fight for those kids that are, to get better schools? The community issues become your issues when you're incarnational. And it's not like the one-week mission trip downtown or the one-week deal across the seas. This is my neighborhood. These are my friends. And through those relationships, we begin to listen. And they would say, hey, my husband needs a job. And so we created a job training program. My uncle is on crack, and so we created alcohol and drug rehab residential program. Everything we've done, we didn't know what we were doing. We just loved our neighbors, and you can Google anything today and figure it out. And so we created things. So today there's 15 programs, and as the neighborhood has changed slowly, I mean, this has been a long process. The neighborhood grocery store wasn't there anymore. Years ago, people there was an old Safeway across the street from the World Cup Cafe that had become a predatory convenience store. They sold bread for about three times the actual amount it should have cost in a grocery store. There were lottery tickets and 40-ounces, and people bought groceries there, if you want to call it that, that no fruits, no vegetables. And the neighborhood people in our relationships would say, help us with a grocery store. The closest grocery store was 2.2 miles to the HEB on North 19th. And by definition, Department of Agriculture calls that a food desert. They're all over America. As the grocery stores have moved to the edges of town and the neighborhood grocery stores became convenience stores, poor people have few choices. And so we tried to buy that old building for about 4 years, and they wouldn't sell at a reasonable price. And then one day the rains came and the ceiling fell in and they were ready to sell. And so we went across the street and bought the old building. And it took a whole lot of work. It was one of the most fun projects I've ever been a part of. We first thing we did was bring the neighborhood together because we work bottom up. We don't tell people what they need. We listen to them. And 65 people showed up that day, and we said, okay, tell us what you wish this store was. And we ended up with 12 different things that they said, and number one was grocery store. 77% said, we want a grocery store. So we went back, started studying the deal. It was tough. I didn't realize how small of a margin grocery stores make on food itself, like 2%. And so they make their money on everything but food now. It's pharmaceuticals and medicines and hair stuff and whatever it is. But we weren't going to do that. Our goal was food, fresh food, healthy food. So the fun thing was I was speaking in a big church in Dallas one night, and two guys came up at the end and said, we both work for Kroger. He said, I ran them all over the Northeast. The other guy says, I build them. And he said, we need to come down and help you. And I guess I kind of must have had that deer in the headlight look, you know, that I didn't know what I was doing. So they came down every 2 weeks, and then we added some other guys that came out of the same kind of background, and we called them our dream team. And these 10 folks sat around the table every 2 weeks and talked about how do we build this thing. So we had two different groups. One was the construction group and how much it would cost to remodel it. The other side was the what kind of groceries, where do you get suppliers from, how do we make that margin safe enough to do this. And so we started raising money, and that was we really were scared because we thought, you know, Mission Waco has to raise money to do what we do, and if we start raising money for this project and they quit giving to the Mission Waco, then I can't pay staff. So there was this convoluted reality. But what happened was just the opposite. People began to realize, I don't know if it was because they had to walk, people had to walk 2.5 miles, that the middle class began to realize this is not right. And if it's going on all over America, we want to make a change. But people began to buy their, we called them certificates of stock for the neighborhood. People would buy $25 stock or three or four stocks. They weren't worth anything except the paper they were on, but it was fun to be a part of this investment mindset in the neighborhood. And all of a sudden, all over Waco and beyond Waco, people began to give. We ended up with about probably 10% corporate, Walmart, HEB, PepsiCo, all gave some funds. But most of it came from local people who believed in what we were doing. They trusted us. We have a high rating for Charity Navigator, the highest you can get, so we can be trusted on our with accountability. And people gave. And end of the door, I had a superintendent quit one day. We were halfway through, through the construction, raising our money. And this guy walked in and said, my wife says I'm supposed to help you. Well, he was one of the largest construction guys in Waco, Texas. And Ed Mazonic came in and said, I'm here to help. And so the next 3 or 4 months, he was there. And we put the store together, and it's a sharp. If you haven't been there, please come. Let me tell you this. We depend on middle-class people shopping there to be able to keep the store open. It's a nonprofit grocery store. Poor people don't have the capital to buy enough groceries to fund it alone. So we need the community. But we've got great food. We've got grass-fed beef. We've got all kinds of foods. We got the best prices on Bluebell in town. And so we sometimes people think, well, I don't want to buy at that store because that's taken away from the poor. Just the opposite. We need the community to buy groceries there so that we can continue to do what we're doing. And we opened the doors and people came. It's been so fun. We did our just this past weekend. Did our loyalty cards, so we were able to give people a discount. If they are in the neighborhood within 1 mile of any direction, we can give them if they buy $25 worth of groceries, we can give them $5 back. And so we're trying everywhere we can to get people to think differently about food and do some healthy things, and it's happening. It's been fun.
Dr. Marlene Reed is a professor at Baylor. She was a former guest on this show. And she runs a program at Baylor in the business school called BEST, where they've been creating a concept for a grocery in East Waco. What you guys have done with Jubilee has picked up a lot of attention locally, not only, but also nationally. You recently had a group from Dallas come down. Do you see Jubilee as something that's replicable that could potentially stand in as a solution for these food deserts that we have, not just in Waco, but across the country?
I do. We need two or three more years to make sure that the finances work. We always give ourselves two or three years to know it's going to be these first few years of building the base have to happen. We've had two groups now from Dallas, had a group from Austin contact me last week, and you're right. This is not a Waco problem. This is a national problem, and
right.
People are looking for solutions, and I think it's a viable possibility, and we're feeling really good about what's happening right now, but we'll need a couple more years to be sure that the model works and is replicable.
The area in which you are in North Waco in 1978 was much scarier than it is today, in large part because of the infrastructure that you guys have built and because of the support and the respect that the neighborhood has for Mission Waco. Do you feel like what are your fears?
We don't have any. I know that sounds a little confusing to people who live in the fear that people who are different from them can hurt them or bother. But we moved into a big old house that had formerly been a nice neighborhood. This was where the lawyers and doctors lived. And when we moved in, we became the only Caucasians. There was a bar across the street. I raised four children in the middle of that. We built a basketball court, and the kids all came to our house. And it just became relational. The neighborhood was rough. The corner where Jubilee Food Market is now, where the World Cup Cafe is, that was the roughest corner in the city. What had happened was the old neighborhood, a lot of the folks in this listening to this voice now that were 80, 85 years old, that was their old neighborhood. They went to school there. They went to the theater that was called the Texas Theater. They had all the local businesses around them. But as the poor who began to move across the river, primarily ethnic and racial minorities, as they moved across the river into North Waco, white flight happened to the suburbs all over Waco, and that old neighborhood turned completely upside down. And so over time, it really was blighted. We had prostitutes on the streets, crack dealers on the corner, the old theater had become a porno theater, and there were other three bars in there. So it was about as tough as you can get. We didn't go down there very often, but on as we began to just, in our own faith, begin to think, wouldn't it be great if someday we could do something here? So eventually the city condemned the property. This is across the street from the Jubilee Food Market, and they tagged it with green tags so that it couldn't be used unless somebody brought it up to code. We went and found the owner, said, would you make us a deal? And he said, no, here. And he signed the deed and handed it to me.
Wow.
So we had five buildings that were sitting in water, and we didn't have very many volunteers and very little money, but we just felt like it was the right place to make a change. So over time, one building at a time, we would remodel that and then do what we did. Where the World Cup Cafe is now, that was sort of the challenge because we knew we had to get middle-class Waco back down to that corner. Mm. And the gateway became the cafe. Now, we knew we'd lose money. You don't build cafe. It's hard enough for food cafes anyway to make it, and certainly in a blighted neighborhood. But the board had enough confidence that we could do this, and we agreed how much we were willing to lose on it. We thought of it as a program. And every year got better and better, and now we're breaking even. We're the number one restaurant in town for breakfast, and you can't get in there on Saturday morning. and the back is all fair trade, and we have people that are coming from all over, particularly now with the Magnolia event. There's people coming from out of city and out of state. And so we really have this it's the way we do things. We're not real smart. We just don't go away. You know, people we just keep hanging in there, and over time, build a base. And the same will happen with a grocery store, just like that. So the neighborhood has changed. The fear factor for us is never really been too bad. My kids navigated those waters as children. They just played with the kids on the basketball court like they were best friends anyway. And so my kids didn't grow up in prejudice. And we experience that a lot. We have this poverty simulation we do where we have people come to Mission Waco and become poor for a weekend. It's transformative. And the middle-class people who have watched their kids get more afraid, more hard, pull away because they have all these fears. The gap in America, by the way, between rich and poor, the fear factor is growing because we don't trust the other groups. Well, poverty simulation and other things that we do, we've got today in Waco, there's 70 kids down at Mission Waco that are from Austin and Dallas that are staying with us for 4 or 5 days. We do that all summer long with groups. Those things help bridge gaps. So relationships is the key. If you look at it from an outside perspective, you read the newspaper, hear the news, you find yourself afraid. When you get down there and realize this is just a kid that I'm playing with, and they want to have a life just like I have, and so those things begin to fall away. And so that's what we do.
I'll get you out of here on this. For Downtown Depot listeners who've heard the story of the work you're doing in Waco and want to get involved, one way is by going through the poverty simulation. That might not be of everyone's taste. Maybe you're not really willing to step out that far, but they could potentially help with other projects that you have going on. What is the next 25 looking like at Mission Waco?
It's good. There are two things I think the next steps become for people. The first thing is do our Other Side of Waco tour. It's interesting now there's a tour that happens on 15th Street that goes west because of the Magnolia effect that's happening. People want to know about Waco. But we have been doing for about 12 years a tour that goes on the poverty side and the east side, and we give people a tour and help them see and understand and see the nonprofits and explain. That's a great thing to do. It takes about an hour and 15 minutes, and we do it for free, so people can just call and set up for that. The other is to volunteer. Give us 2 hours a week. Give us 3 hours a week and say, I will work with a child after school. I'll help with our theater, drama kids, our art. We'll help the homeless do some things for the hygiene packs. There's so many different things because we're large now. We have so many opportunities. So people can come in with their timeline and say, how can I help? And we volunteer. I have a volunteer coordinator, and we can get them plugged in. And then the next things would be to do that. Get involved and then consider the poverty simulation. Go on a trip with us. I just got back from Mexico City last week. 30 million people in one city. Come and see the orphans and work with us with the poor there. Take as big a risk as you're willing to, and we'll take care of the protection and institutional side of it, and your life will never be the same.
Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thank you, buddy.
You can listen to this episode again, as well as sort through all my conversations with Waco's movers and shakers on wacobusinessnews.com, through the Apple Podcast app, or through NPR One. Until our next episode on the first Friday of August, keep up to date with what's happening in your city by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Waco Business News. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.